I'm Duncan McLeod, and you're listening to the Tech Central podcast. I'm at the Saxon Hotel in Johannesburg today to talk to Trevor Kutsia, Regional Director for Sub-Saharan Africa at McAfee, and to Rob Brown, CEO of Cybersecurity Specialists, DRS. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks very much.
Trevor, let me start with you. Tell me a bit about McAfee. I know it was founded all the way back in 1987. Its founder, John McAfee, who's no longer involved, is one of the more colorful characters in the industry, certainly that the industry has produced. It was bought by Intel back in 2011 and later spun out again, though I believe Intel continues to be a significant investor in the business. I remember using McAfee antivirus products on my PC all the way back in the early 1990s, but the company is, of course, much more than about antivirus products today. Take us through some of the history.
Yeah, sure. From a corporate point of view, you'll be one of the 432 million endpoints that are managed by McAfee from an antivirus point of view. But in 2010, acquired by Intel, and I think it was 2017, spun out again. TPG as the major shareholder. Intel still plays quite a large role, I think 49% shareholding. In terms of portfolio, we cover everything from endpoint data, data security, ultimately network security, event orchestration, SecOps, and so forth. So we cover a broad range of security technologies across multi-platform, from consumer all the way up into the enterprise space. In terms of visibility, we cover around 83% of the financial institutions globally. About 83% of the Fortune 100 companies. And again, that's not just endpoint, that's multi-portfolio, consolidation, rationalization across customers' requirements for security.
So tell us a bit about McAfee's history in South Africa. How long have you been in the country, and what's your involvement been here?
We were in the 90s, we were localized here in South Africa. Since then, so we've been in South Africa for at least 18 plus years with localized presence as well. Currently, we have about 13 team members from sales to channel, because we're a channel-based organization. That is the way we deliver our capabilities, services, and solutions through partners like CyberOne. But having said that, we started with the endpoint back in the 90s, went through content filtering, went through a whole bunch of iterations in terms of the technologies that we provide. And ultimately, we shifting into this new world of cybersecurity, cloud-based technologies.
Rob, let me bring you in here. Tell me a bit about the history of DRS and CyberOne. What do you guys do?
Yeah, so interesting journey we've been on. So you mentioned John McAfee in 87, and I originally hopped onto this industry in 94 with Dr. Solomons.
Oh, yes.
When Dr. Solomons and McAfee used to be the two competing rivals, with Symantec as the third, So it's been, or Norton, as most people knew it in those days. So it's been quite an interesting journey for us. McAfee acquired Solomons in 1998, and that just fell in as a partnership between ourselves and McAfee. So we've been with them for 20 years. I'm proud to say that in those 20 years, we've been at their top-level partner status for 20 years, and that's, for me, quite an achievement. We've got some other first achievements that we've done with McAfee, where we were the first partner globally to be certified in professional services with them. And that's quite an achievement as a little South African company, that you get recognized by McAfee as an early adopter of things like that. We're the only partner in Africa that does their services in terms of support services. So we're what they call a MASP partner. And that allows us to do first and second line support for McAfee. We're on a brand new train the trainer program with them. We're the guinea pigs to see how that works, where they train our technical guys to further train our other technical people, so we can start doing a lot more scalability. The problem we've always found in security is, how scalable can you get this? Mm-hmm. We there's a shortage of 2 million positions globally already in security, so it's difficult. You've got to try and bring in more people. We've got to try and scale it as fast as possible, train people. DRS grew just out of being antivirus through to content filtering, through to now supporting the entire McAfee stack, as well as the McAfee complementary technologies, so the guys who are part of their SIA partner program or DXL program. So we've taken on some of those technologies, people like Checkpoint, where there's full integration between that. So, and that's been important for us because I don't think there is any silver bullet for any customer, and it is how technologies integrate nowadays and give a better integration and security framework that customers are looking for, because they don't want disparate systems. They need the stuff to talk to each other in order to give better defense. And so we've grown the business, and then we sold the business 3 years ago to a company overseas. They've listed us on the stock exchange in Sweden, so Nasdaq First North.
That's now Cyber One,
yeah.
So the DRS brand name stays?
DRS brand stays because it's a big brand name in this country.
Mm-hmm.
It does say a Cyber One company, so we've got that. And it's nice to sort of have that bigger brand as well. It makes us look, you know, quite strong. I think it's helped us win some business. Nice thing about that also is that they also recognize that we need to be still a South African company. So they've also helped us progress over the years. And so we managed to go from a level 4 to a level 2 BE company in South Africa. And I think that's very progressive of an international company to also continue to think like that. So especially with all the new codes, it's become difficult. But we need to play in this market. We need to be South African, and we need to provide solutions to our customers that they want to buy from us.
So what sort of conversations are you having with corporate clients? What are they, I mean, when you go in to speak to a customer for the first time, is it a more of a consulting role that you have to talk about some of the emerging threats? I mean, just take us through what...
Yeah, so, and I think it's a difficult one, because in a lot of customers you go and talk to, they believe that they're protected.
Yeah.
I think most customers think that they've got a protection. We look at really trying to understand where there is a gap, be it maybe in some services, some consulting services, to say, well, let's come and do an analysis for you to see really what your protection looks like. It might be that. It might be a penetration test. It might be from us saying to them, well, you know, what projects have you got going on that you think that you've got a requirement, be it maybe there's some new legislature that's come out, so the guys are having to do something like GDPR because they've got a European mm-hmm. office and they have to go and do something like that. So there's lots of different methodologies that we do. I mean, a lot of times what we try and explain to new customers is, well, if we're consulting to most of the large banks and insurance companies and that sort of stuff, surely you'd want to have a chat to us, because we might be doing something right, you know, and even if it's just a chat to mm-hmm. start with. But our biggest thing into the industry is, we're not here to, you know, come and grab some quick cash and dash out. The relationships we've got in security have been for a long, long time. I mean, we've had customers for 19, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't stay in those customers for 19, 20 years because you're not doing something right. You really got to be on your toes the whole time. Security is one of the fastest changing sectors globally. I mean, what you think's protecting you today might not protect you tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that's why it's been great having a partnership with McAfee, because they realize that and they've, you know, expanded their entire portfolio and really tried to continue to address new tech, bring it on board. And that really helps us from a business point of view.
Well, I think that segues quite nicely into my next question for you, Trevor. How has the information security landscape changed in recent years?
I think, I mean, historically it was always, you know, quite a flat structure. You remember, if I've got antivirus and I've got a firewall and so I'm now safe.
We're way beyond that now.
Way beyond that. quarterly updates with a little CD-ROM or not even a floppy disk at that stage a couple of quarters ago. But yeah, I think, you know, from a globalization, overall improvements in IT infrastructure, connectivity, specifically here in Africa, it's really amplified the sort of cloud service adoption. It's also grown telecommuters, mobile workforces, and it's really shifted the traditional corporate network edge completely away to become some sort of invisible perimeter. Your endpoint is your new perimeter. To accentuate this, the Bring Your Own Device, the BYOD, has further exposed companies in terms of threats introduced by now unmanaged devices, non-company owned devices as well. So it's really forced organizations to relook the traditional security measures and introduce next generation capabilities to provide the protection for the data. So regardless of where it sits, who accesses it, and by what means they're accessing it. And those are the kind of portfolios that we're looking at, obviously, getting into or are already in.
Rob, are South African corporates facing exactly the same cybersecurity challenges as their peers internationally, or are there challenges, in your view, that are specific to this market?
Well, I think we're facing the same challenges because, I relate it back to physical security to a certain extent. In South Africa, you build a high wall, and because the person's going to come over that wall, or through the gate or something like that. The problem with cyber is it has no boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
The guy doesn't have to be in your country; he can be anywhere.
And usually is in another country.
Usually is in another country, one that doesn't have the laws to probably clamp him down and have a go at him and that sort of stuff. So that really has made South African companies have to sit up and go, we've got to protect against this, because it's not something that we can physically see or stop against locally. You can put lots of armed guards to stop an armed robbery, but this is very different. You've got to get out there. Also, the fact that our banking sector is very, very advanced. I mean, we rated probably 3 in the world from a financial technology point of view, which is great from being where we are in South Africa. Our banks have had to be very, smart and have done some really great things. And so they've got to protect against that, because if you're on the leading edge on that side, you've got systems that, that you're going to have to spend more time protecting against. The guys have been quite good there. My concern is that I don't think the rest of the sector has kept up with it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my personal view, I think government needs to really spend a lot more time doing this. They're lagging behind.
In terms of legislation?
No, not in terms of actually security itself.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, they're definitely lagging behind in terms of systems and what they're protecting and how they're protecting and that. You'd probably find if they'd had in a lot more of the systems, we might not have lost as much in some of the conversations that are going on in Parliament at the moment. We would have detected it earlier, seen that the money was moving faster. I think that they've got to do it. They also need to, more positive in terms of legislation. We've been speaking about Poppy for how long?
Years and years.
Years and years and years. But it's still not enforced. And that's a concern. I mean, GDPR came around after Poppy and is enforced already. And so we need to get smarter like that. That's in South Africa. The problem even further afield into Africa is that there isn't the legislation.
At all.
Yeah, I mean, some of the countries north of our borders do not have legislation as to how you can present digital evidence in court. That's very frightening in this day and age, because I always say if you looked for something and you didn't find a digital footprint, you probably haven't looked hard enough, because everything leaves a digital footprint nowadays. We try and teach our kids this, but they'll post on Facebook and Instagram and but I think South African companies do need to do a bit more about it.
Yeah.
I think there is
are there sectors that are leading, like financial services?
Financial insurance definitely leading.
Because they have to, right?
Yeah, they have to, yeah. They've got massive assets to protect.
Healthcare.
I mean, yeah. Healthcare's next. Healthcare's gonna have to be the next one. I mean you have a look at it, and this is not to knock companies, but two companies in the same group, Standard Bank and Liberty, both getting breached within a year of each other.
Yeah,
that's you would have thought that they would have learned from the one on the other. But then you go and have a look overseas, where you've got massive companies like Maersk. They lost 4,500 computers at once.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite a rebuild to ransomware, mm-hmm. you know.
It was WannaCry.
Well, WannaCry, yeah. It cost them $300 million.
Mm-hmm.
That's an expensive lesson.
Yeah.
That's we know about. We probably think it's more, but
yeah.
300 that you can actually physically account for.
Yeah. So, Trevor, in your conversations with South African CIOs and chief security officers, what is top of their mind from a security perspective?
So I'm going to expand more than just security, right?
Because sure.
predominantly a CIO and a CISO is reasonably looking at the same things, but predominantly, you know, how do I grow the business? How do I make my employees more productive and the business in general more innovative? And agile, and how do I utilize new technologies to further that development? And doing all of this more cost effectively and making sure I'm doing it more securely, making sure that my data, from a risk perspective, the integrity remains constant. So, you know, briefly, that's what I would say. You know, how do I do more with less, especially with the current resource shortage that we're experiencing in country, well, globally, I would think, from a security point of view.
Plus our economy, no doubt.
Well, yeah, I mean...
budgets are under pressure.
Yeah. I think from an IT point of view, budgets will always be under pressure. There's always new shiny toys.
Mm-hmm.
There's always new things to do. And as the economy grows, so there's new agile ways of doing things. And one of those things, security always needs to be attached on the back end. A lot of the CIOs, CISOs that I'm talking to now really are looking at, bearing in mind there's over 1,400 current security vendors in the globe. So you can imagine the amount of knocking on the doors that CIOs and CISOs are getting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the main driver there is consolidation, rationalization, and optimization. And optimization of what I currently have already and how can I better utilize it, how can I automate and prioritize activities, and how do I currently use the resources that I have to do more within my organization.
So we've touched on it already. You mentioned the bring your own device to work phenomenon, but that's part of this broad concept that's called shadow IT, the IT idea that companies' IT systems are no longer entirely in the control of the IT department. And I think we see it in just about any company, people spinning up servers under desks and all this sort of thing. Firstly, what is the broad definition of shadow IT, and how much of a problem is that from a security perspective?
So it really depends on who you ask, to be honest. The rapid adoption of cloud services, it brings a lot of improvements, a lot of agility, but with it brings a lot of risk, and that risk is visibility in terms of what cloud services I'm utilizing and what risk those specific services are bringing into the organization. Now, you know, we've done a lot of surveys, we've done a lot of assessment within organizations, and some organizations, well, by far the average organization is using well over 1,400 cloud services within the environment. Year-over-year growth, at least 15% year-on-year growth on that.
It's not all managed, right?
The scary part is that you speak to your execs, you speak to your administrators and so forth, they believe they're using around 30 within their organization. So you can imagine the amount of unmanaged, unknown from a visibility point of view, shadow IT or applications that were used within the organization. I guess from an employee point of view, you want to get something done. There is a tool that can assist, and generally you can download it from the internet. I register quickly, and it's a free service. Great. A lot of people and a lot of organizations are not looking at your cloud service provider's terms of service, confidentiality, etc. A lot of these file sharing, I don't know if you've ever used a file sharing capability.
Not in a long time, but yes.
So you know, and organizations do that. You know, I can't send a 25, 30 meg mail out to somebody or more. So it's easy. I use one of these services, upload the information.
For
whichever cloud service that you want to use. And The thing is that you haven't read the terms and conditions stating that whatever you upload to this free service is now belongs to that service, and the information that you've sent is included in that, so they can utilize that information as, you know, as they wish, and that's a breach of corporate information and data integrity, and employees are doing it, you know, they're not doing it maliciously, they're just trying to be more productive. Ultimately.
And I suppose regulations like Poppy, for example, place limitations on what you can do with customer data. For example, putting it on a server of a cloud provider in another country, whereas perhaps the legislation or the regulations state that sensitive customer data must be housed on certain infrastructure in country.
Correct. Well, data residency is a massive regulatory requirement, whether it's GDPR, Poppy, et cetera, et cetera. But it goes beyond that. So, you know, let's say you have a local service that's providing capability of storage in the cloud. We've done, you know, there's about 17,500 current cloud services out there.
Wow.
And approximately 8% of them comply with data regulation. And, you know, to give you an example, only 15% of those provide multi-factor authentication. Only 10% of those provide data encryption of the data being stored. And only 6% are ISO certified. So as a huge organization using these services, there's huge risk in terms of that privacy of that data.
So what does McAfee offer to help companies overcome these challenges?
So McAfee as an organization has a plethora of technologies. I think what we do is we provide a number of services, key insights to customers, you know, provide them with the mindshare, provide them with the advice and the opinions in terms of what we're seeing globally and the risks attached to it. What we're also doing, and this is not a product pitch, so I'm not going to really deliver in terms of the 100 odd technologies that we're able to provide customers. But what we're ultimately trying to do here is we're trying to provide customers with three key things. So detect, protect, and correct. Right. So detect, as in, you know, provide key, you know, gain the complete visibility into the data, the context, the user behavior, you know, all the cloud services, whether it's software infrastructure or platform as a service. We then provide the mechanisms to be able to protect, you know, and apply persistent protection to that sensitive data. And then ultimately, we'll also be able to provide you with correction activity. So once you do see a deviation or a threat, you know, being able to take real-time action within those cloud services to protect your relevant data. And we have the relevant technologies to provide you with that detection, protection, and correction capabilities.
Rob, in your interactions with corporate decision-makers, CIOs and the like, how are they dealing with the concept of shadow IT, and we can include the discussion about cloud computing in this as well? I mean, is the risk, do the risks outweigh the opportunities in some respects?
Yeah, that's a hell of a good question. I mean, do the risks outweigh the opportunities? I don't think anyone thinks the risks outweigh the opportunities nowadays, because we're under such pressure to deliver faster, meaner, leaner, better than the competitor, you know. So from that point of view, no, I don't think anyone thinks that the risks outweigh the opportunities, you know. But in reality, I think what a lot of the guys are starting to realize is before, security was an afterthought. Now security must be an integral part, and everything should be designed as part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of that mindset starting to come in. I do think there is, and we spoke about it earlier, there's still a blind side where the guys don't know what they're looking at. And there are massive opportunities, and Trev might not have the plug, but I'll have the plug, that they've got a great CASB solution where we can just go and show people what the environment looks like. It's not even a sale. It's like, let's just show you what your risk profile looks like, so you can get a better handle on this. Because if you don't know what you're trying to protect against, how are you ever going to protect against it? You know, and it's not, you can use other tools as well, but I mean, we've chosen McAfee just because it fits in with everything else that we're trying to do, and you know, we've got a massive customer base that do it. But they've got a great tech. It's recognized across Gartner, Forrester,
IDC,
NSS, carry on that plug. one of the few that's actually recognized across all three. And so that for us is great. Showing customers, listen, here's what you got your risk, what you should be protecting against, and then trying to advise them on where to go there. As Trev says, 1,400 applications, and you think you might be using 30, that's a big scare, and I think we haven't seen it yet because with Poppy not coming in, but we're going to see it just now in Europe, where that first company gets that massive GDPR fine. I think there's a race. British Airways are definitely in that race with their data breach. There's a couple that are challenging for it. But someone's going to get that big fine that's a big number. And I think that's going to make people wake up. Liberty potentially could be in that race. I don't know how it's affected them with GDPR. I don't want to speculate, cross-border platforms. But they hold people's information from all over the world. Just because they're a South African company doesn't mean you're not exposed to international regulations and that sort of stuff, and so a person over there might say, well, my data was breached and therefore you're in breach of GDPR because I live in Europe.
Are you finding more senior people within the organization are getting involved in information security? Are you finding that in the past perhaps it was left to someone in the IT department to manage, and now it's got the attention perhaps of the board, perhaps even the CEO? Do you think there's been that sort of shift in focus? And if not, do you think that shift in focus needs to happen?
Look, there's definitely been a shift in focus. I mean, if you look at a lot of the stuff now, it is around liability back to the most senior people in the company. And so you'll have seen that there's been quite a few senior people that have, headed out the door because of data breaches and that sort of stuff. The guys have realized it's going to cost money. First of all, the breach is going to cost money to fix, and they've got to start really addressing it. I don't think we've seen it here yet. I think it will come. We're definitely going to see it here. It has to. People aren't going to stand by and just let companies get away with this. Someone has to be held accountable. It's like anything in a company. If you didn't do what the average man would have done, then you should be held accountable. And the average man would definitely try and protect his information and his assets.
Trevor, where should the buck stop? Should it be with the chief information officer or chief security officer, or should the buck stop in the CEO's desk?
Reporting lines, depends a lot. Some organizations, the chief security reports into the board versus corporate. In certain instances, into CIO and, potentially, obviously, into CEO. So it's dependent on the structure, of the organization. From my point of view, there was actually a third-party report that was done by a leading organization where the top 10 priorities of CEOs and CIOs were discussed within IT. And funny enough, security wasn't mentioned within any of the top 10. And it was quite a shock. This company basically turned around and said, well, infrastructure upgrades, agility, cloud, shift, all of those are priorities. Why isn't security? And the majority of the responses was, well, we don't see it as a singular effort and a specific project. Security should be wrapped around everything that we do. And that is really refreshing to see that it's gone beyond just having a security person deploying, tech. To every project that we do, we need to make sure integrity and security is there, which is really refreshing. But in terms of liability, where it comes down to, you know, sometimes you wish it was the CFO because they release the budgets to spend on security. But yeah, I mean, they're definitely, you know, I would believe that at least the executive management needs to be held accountable in some way, shape or form for any breach of privacy or, you know, or data. And I'm sure that's coming with regulatory, you know, it just has to get a bit of teeth. But in line with regulation, you know, the buck will stop at, there's going to be huge losses outside of just fines and you know, imprisonment or whatever it may be. There's going to be massive brand reputation damage to organizations.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a look, I'll just add on that, you know, if I can. If you have a look at, it was quite a shock, at the mining industry.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got some massive mining companies in this country. It was amazing to find out that only one of those companies has a CISO appointed. And that's very frightening for me. Here are these companies, you know, 14,000 employees and that sort of stuff, you know, big data. I mean, they've got a hell of a data to protect in terms of, you know, what mineral rights are out there, the company, employees' information, all that sort of stuff. And one of them's taking it seriously and has appointed a CISO. So maybe it needs to go to the top in terms of the CEO being accountable because they haven't gone and put in the correct people to address the situation.
So final thoughts before we wrap up. It sounds to me like some industries are doing a lot better than other industries, but as a country, we probably still have a long road to travel before we start to really ensure that we comply with global regulations to ensure that company systems are as secure as they can be. Just some final thoughts, guys. Trevor?
So 3 points. I think, you know, in terms of the opportunity that cloud services and cloud service providers can bring to organizations, both from a growth, from an agility, from an innovation point of view, I think the C-suite within companies, they need to be agile enough to empower organizations to utilize this. But they should be open enough to fully understand, number one, cloud service provider terms of service, and the regulatory associations to where that data sits or regulatory requirements. And ultimately, you know, leverage the likes of McAfee or you know, or partners like CyberOne to understand what controls, number one, visibility. Number two, how do I place controls into the organizations to protect my data so that I can become more agile and an empowering organization.
Rob, final thoughts?
Yeah, no, I just, from this industry, I just think that there needs to be maybe a little bit more urgency from government in identifying where they need to go. I see they finally made a decision on actually doing a cloud, their own private cloud. That's something that they're going to go towards, which is quite far behind. I also think that companies need to do a lot more research on who their providers are, why they're going with providers, and look at that closely, because I think security is really important. We do a lot of research when we want to, you know, buy a motor car or those sorts of things. I don't think we do as much research. You know, what's the service backup behind it? What are the technical skills behind it? What are the financial stability of those companies? And choose partners that way, like we would in any day contract if we were personally involved in it. I think we need to start doing a lot more of that, and then get out there and go and see what other people are doing. Measure yourself against your colleagues elsewhere. There's some great tools out there to do that. See how you benchmark against companies who are doing what you do elsewhere in the world, and see maybe whether you're keeping abreast of them or you're lagging behind.
Rob Brown is CEO of DRS, and Trevor Kutsia is Regional Director for Sub-Saharan Africa at McAfee. This has been a great discussion, gentlemen. Thank you for your time.
Thanks very much. Have a great day.
Thanks.